What's up, y'all? Welcome to our YouTube channel, Africans Talk Football. Appreciate your guys' continued support. Don't forget to like and subscribe. Thank you.
So welcome to another episode of Africans Talk Football, where we bring you fresh news highlighting the Africans and African Americans who have seen success within the sport. We'll bring you news from our favorite teams within the Premier League, MLS, NWSL, as well as informing you on the other top European leagues and soccer news worldwide. Whether this is your first episode with us or you've been rocking with us from the jump, again, I just want to say thank you to all of our supporters and friends. Again, my name is Cornelius, and I'm joined by my boys and fellow co-hosts. Gabriel, how you feeling?
I ain't gonna lie, I've been better. But, you know, I'm here with the boys, man. I can't complain. My guys, Salam, how you feeling?
Good, man. I got to see the fellas this past weekend, so all is good, man. Can't complain. Right. How about you, Cornelius? Yeah.
Good, man. Mm-hmm. It was good seeing you and Mike this past weekend. Very fun-filled weekend, very soccer-filled weekend. I feel like all we did was watch, talk, and absorb the game this weekend, which is kind of crazy. I even had to dip out and coach on Saturday for a few hours. So, yeah, man, I feel like we were just all with our head in the game, no pun intended. But I want to start off with a quote, actually. I didn't throw this in the group earlier today, but I saw this while I was working, and I thought it was great. Or maybe I did throw it in the group. I'm not sure. But Lionel Scaloni, obviously he was the coach for Argentina, the Argentina national team. He said, "We are losing the essence of football, not only at a professional level, but also with kids. My children play in Spain, and they are being overwhelmed with information. They receive the ball and are being told what to do. There are fewer dribblers because if they barely get the ball and you say pass it, imagine if Messi was, when he was 8 years old, was constantly told by his coaches to pass it. We wouldn't have him today. Football has become such a huge thing. Everybody reads, studies, and thinks that they can already manage. If you tell a 7 or 8 year old how to make a diagonal run, cover defensively, he's only 7 years old. Let him play with the ball. Let him make mistakes. And when he's 14 or 15, then we can start correcting. It's a message for the future. This is a sport, and the beauty of football should not be lost." That was a quote that he had. I think he was being interviewed. I'm not exactly sure by who. It says, the quote was quoted from SRUSA official, and their Twitter profile says, "America's leading male and female college soccer placement agency, as seen on BBC Sport and Sky Sports." So I saw that quote today, and I honestly was moved by it because I feel like we've kind of talked about the essence of the game being lost, the game being gone. You know, we kind of joke around and we say that a lot. But hearing that from a professional manager on the highest level, Salam, obviously you were a coach on, you know, on a very elite level as well for youth. I'm coaching now and, you know, a recreational and travel league capacity. But I kind of wanted to hear you guys and kind of just sit with that for a sec, but kind of internalize that and your first thoughts and how that makes you feel. And if you agree with it, you disagree with it, kind of just want to open it up.
Yeah, I mean, as you said that, I think that the first thing that came to my head was, and I hate to answer a question with a question, but I mean, do we really have the caliber of player that I guess we did when we were growing up now? I think it's far in between. And that could be a result of these systems. But to me, like, I look at the game now and there's, you know, very few players that I look at and say, like, wow, like this guy looks like someone that could, you know, really influence a game by himself. I feel like back then we had more of those. And I mean, even in when you look at our conversation a few weeks ago with the Ballon d'Or, we were saying a player that was considered probably the favorite to be the best player in the world is not really the best player in the world. He's just having a great number statistically. A great season statistically. And I think that guy's quote is a product of a few different things. I think first, obviously, we know the influence that Pep Guardiola has had on European football and football in general, and how, you know, his system and his idea, and not just his system. Like when you look at other coaches throughout the league or in Europe, in the world, they usually have a system and they stick by it. I felt like back in the day, you kind of watched your team play in a few different formations. But I know it's a long-winded answer, but I almost feel like coaches have to kind of put their players in those positions because of the quality that you see from a lot of these youth players. Here in America, I think that it serves us very well because I think that these systems really teach American kids kind of some of the concepts, some of the fundamental concepts that go into soccer. But out in Europe, I think that, you know, I think that, or not even just Europe, South America, anywhere that's not North America, I think the reins could definitely be a little bit looser because, you know, you're holding a lot of these kids back. I look at a guy like Lamine Yamal. He's not someone that, you know, we should look to box him in into this box and say, you need to be this type of player, this type of system player. But to be honest with you, I feel like coaches almost have to go down this route with sticking with a system that works, because if the system works, all that you need to do is just, you know, plug and play players. You know, you're not so reliant on your number 10 being your best player and having to, you know, make something out of nothing. So I think it's just more sustainable.
That's interesting. I was not expecting that answer from you. It's funny that you said a lot. I feel like we have to unpack a lot, but one of the things that stood out was you said that you don't feel like there's as many like impact players in today's game as there were back in the day.
Right.
I don't know if I agree. And this is kind of me speaking ignorantly. Like you've been coaching for a while, you know, and you've had your girls teams and stuff like that. So you've seen it, you know, firsthand, but I don't know. I feel like there are still a lot of young ballers coming out, like a lot of them. And I would say that to your point, yes, the systems are ruining players, 100%. I completely agree. And I'll go back to this with one of my old youth coaches. I remember one of my old youth coaches, his name was Paul. He's coached for PFC. Shout out, Paul. Really influential coach for my youth. Yeah, for sure. Paul, shout out, Paul. And I remember him telling me when he, like, when I was a kid and he first started watching me play, he used to just let me dribble, bro. Honestly, no team that I was on of his, like, yes, he wanted me to, you know, play and of course pass when I needed to pass and things like that, but he was very much like, he gave me that freedom of like, no, express yourself, like go and express yourself. And not even myself, but other players that came after me too. And I remember him telling me when I got older, he was like, I would let you dribble and, you know, sometimes you lose it and this guys get mad. Like, why do you keep dribbling and stuff like that? But you know why I did that? It's because you need to play free and all that other stuff, you'll figure it out. And just like the guy said, all that other stuff, you'll figure it out. You can learn runs. You can learn, directional play. You can learn this. You can learn that. But that pure natural ability of being able to express yourself on the pitch and to dribble, you can't teach that. And the more you take that expression away from players, the more and more you lose it. It's a muscle. You have to flex that muscle. You have to work on that muscle and fine tune that muscle for it to be, you know, for it to be strong and for it to be good. And you know, I completely, just speaking on the quote, I completely agree with that. I forgot who you said it was. It was the Argentina manager. Yeah. I completely agree. And you know, it's a product of, you know, not only just Pep. I don't want to just like blame Pep, but it's a product of, you know, playing in systems and things like that. But I completely agree that you have to let kids play. Kids are going to be kids, and you have to let them figure it out. You know, experience is the best teacher. You know, so you give the kid, you this even for someone like myself, right? I dribbled so much, I had to learn when to stop dribbling. Mm-hmm. And it's better for a kid to learn, oh, this is the point when I stop dribbling and pass, because then this lane's open, that lane's open, this guy's open, this space is open because I just beat two players. It's better for him to see that on the pitch and then have a coach come and tell him. You know what I mean? Rather than trying to just force it, hey, when this is going to happen, so you have to pass it here. Like, you have to let these players experience these things. So I completely agree with that sentiment. It is ruining the game. And, yeah, you just have to let kids be kids, you know, at the end of the day. You know, when we get to high school, all that stuff, you know, we can figure it out. But, you know, 13, 14. But when you're 7, 8 years old, bro, dribble. If you're the best player on the pitch, be the best player on the pitch and go and beat everyone. Like, that's that's Cornelius. I swear, I used to go and beat everyone because who stop me? Like, go and stop me. And then once you learn, oh, I have a defender who can stop me. That's how other games
you adjust your game. Yeah, you become a smarter player without even realizing it. Yeah, because then you have to add something to your game on the fly, and that makes you an athlete. That makes you a player because now you're adding your IQ to your physical ability to get around a new type of challenge. And that's why I agreed with this, because I'm like, for me, I'm seeing kids from the age of 3 all the way up to 7th grade on Saturdays.
Right.
And I see some of these 5-year-olds that are physically gifted. You know, they're 3, 4, 5 inches taller than their counterparts. They're able to see a ball, and maybe they have an older brother that plays soccer, an older sister that plays soccer. So they're already in the backyard playing and shooting on goal. So I can see that. So yeah, you know, we try to put, you know, like talent with like talent, but at that age, you just want them to, like Gabriel said, express themselves. Because the more they're able to learn that on their own, by the time they get to those higher levels where they're actually learning techniques and instructions and tactics, they can actually apply that because they've already been thinking that. They just didn't really know how to articulate it, you know? And so for me, I resonated with it just on the same level Gabriel did.
So I have a few things, and I'm not by any means disagreeing with what you guys are saying. I think my problem right now is that I'm really basing this off of the American system. But let me ask you this. I would say if you really want to express yourself, I would encourage you to go play pickup. The reason why I say that is because there, you know, you have the freedom and the autonomy to do anything. That's when I look at even myself, like I was someone who was fortunate enough to play club, but at the same time, like I played with, and he knows, I have someone with me who played with me. When I played, there was this park by our house called Nafsker Park, right? And there I played with a bunch of African guys that were probably older than me, definitely. For sure. I was still in high school. I took more away from that experience than I did in any organized setting. Any situation where I was coached and someone told me, you have to close this half space. You have to, and it wasn't even like that really in depth, I felt like, when I was coming up. Now, you know, we have so much more access to data. All these videos and data and all these things. So, like, yeah, you also have to keep in mind that these players are playing thousands of games a season. So when you're looking at it from a sustainability standpoint, yeah, we're going to have to stick with this system, because this system is going to allow – that's why we get players to follow your system, because in this congested fixture of what our season is, I need to make sure that I have – 2 left backs, 2 right backs, 2 center backs, 2 strikers, 2 center mids, whatever the case may be, to help me last throughout the season. And I know we're looking at it from a very youth standpoint, but I would just be like, if you want to try all that stuff, then go take the time to work on that, so that when you come in this organized setting, right? Because Gabriel, even I know how you play now. I can imagine how you are as a youth, as a youth player. But even for you, though, at some point, when did that stop? Did it stop when you got to college?
Because you said
you were the best player on the field, right? So at some point, though, people catch up to you, whether it be in high school, whether it be for you maybe in college, right? But then what you don't want, though, right, what you don't want is to be this physically gifted kid who can do all these things but doesn't know how to play in a team setting. And 100%. Then now you're a freshman in college, and you can't even play your first 2 years because the first 2 years you're sitting there and you have to learn the game. You have to understand the game. And it's like that's coaching. Nobody taught you that.
Yes, and I completely agree with what you're saying. I guess I'm speaking more from like a when I was saying like I was the best player right on the pitch, like I then maybe I'm tooting my own horn. Cornelius, you can correct me if I'm wrong. I felt like I was the best
in many settings. Gabriel was definitely
and
the best
player. I feel like I was the best player up until I got to uni. Uni was the first time I was like, oh, rude awakening. Rude awakening. Like, yeah, everyone's good. There's not very many like bad players, you know what I mean? Especially in like D1 US system. So that was like my awakening. And at that point, what helped me was not only that, yes, I knew how to express myself, but also like I was saying, when you get to those older ages, right? And especially with me playing club. Yeah, like club, I still felt like I was the best player, you know, on the pitch. But those players are a lot better than high school players, right? You know, you still have some good defenders. You still have some good, you know, players on other teams and stuff. And especially on my teams as well. So I feel like in those moments is when I learned, even though I'm the best player, this player is still pretty good. I have to learn when to dish this ball off. I have to learn this skill and that skill. And I feel like my point is, I feel like when the kid is growing up, yes, they need some type of, you know, thoughts of a system, but I feel like you don't really need to know a system until you get to that 13, 14 age. And then you can beat into them the system in, like, you know, how you want to play and this and the third. And I know we're playing clubs, so there's going to be coaches that tell you how they want to play and stuff like that. But I still think that kids need to have, especially young kids, they need to have that freedom, bro. Like, they have to. And honestly, I mean, we look at football all the time. Football doesn't really look like true football until what, 10 years old, maybe 11, when they really start, okay, the spacing's there, you know, not everyone's just running to the ball. The spacing's there. You can kind of tell them passing patterns and, you know, what you want them to do a little bit. So it's like, the thoughts and, you know, the system start forming at that age. I feel like, you know, that's maybe that 11-ish age, 12-ish age is maybe when you start implementing the system and stuff like that. For those players that are just naturally gifted, bro, they just need to get it out their system. And I know pickup is a great, like, I agree with that 100% too. You said, like, no, go play pickup. And for the older players, 100%, go play pickup and go everything that you just tried in the backyard or on this pitch or whatever, go try that in the men's league, go try that in Sunday league, go try that in pickup, and then go try to do it, you know, in training, and then go try to do it in the match. For sure. For older kids, 100%. But for the younger kids, I think that they need that freedom until they get to, you know, that late middle school to early high school age. That's just...
Go ahead. I'll ask you this one, Cornelius, and then you can go.
Yeah.
Last week, I told you guys about Charlie. I talk about Charlie to you guys a few times. Charlie's a player that was in the club that I was at the same time. I met her at 12 years old. So I think that 12 year that the first year that I met her, by all means dribble, whatever you want to do. And she was doing it. Like, there was nothing that anyone
could do. You wouldn't go stop her.
So let me ask you this, though. Do you think that helps her or hurts her now when she gets selected up to a higher level and now is playing with her peers, representing the National League team, right? Do you think that hurts her or does that help her? Because, like, what we're sitting here talking about, like, Cornelia, like, and this is nothing, like, if I'm working in grassroots soccer and if there's a kids that are having trouble dribbling the ball, I'm not going to bother you with how to press, right? We don't need to work on that. You need to just focus on the fundamentals, right foot, left foot, whatever. Mm-hmm. So a kid like that, a kid that's a little bit more advanced and is getting opportunities to play at a higher level, do you think that that's a disservice to her if in training her club coach is telling her, just do whatever you want to do?
It could be because, and look, for me, everybody's on a different learning curve. And for me, from this Charlie girl, it sounds like from 12 years old, we could obviously tell that she was a different type of gifted.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
and that's like what he's talking about. That's what the coach, the Argentina coach, that's what he's talking about. He's not talking about some kid that's at the park right now who is just, who can't even
I personally I think it was a blanket statement. Personally, I think it was a blanket statement. I don't think it was for the 1% who we know are going to go pro. Because right. for that 1% who we know are going to go pro, we put them on the fast track already. You know, we tell them, hey, we're going to take you from here. We're going to put you to this academy. Hey, even in the U.S. system, when you right. see a really good 7 or 8 year old, he's playing PDL, he's playing CASA, he's playing. You know, or you're up, coaching now. You, like, yeah, they're on those development tracks. So I think he's talking about maybe the tier below where they're still playing Premier, they're still playing, you know, whatever you want to call it. In all these different states, it's called something different. But you know, right. those kids who are still elite, but they may not be that top 1%. That's yeah. who I think that's who I think he's talking about. Let them develop. Because for me, I'll give a personal example. Then, you know, we've been talking about this for about 15 minutes, so we should probably move on. But personally, just like Gabriel, for the most part, growing up, I was one of the better players on the pitch, right? And we jumped from club to club as we realized that we had outgrown the level that we were currently playing. So I tried out for PFC the same time Gable tried out for PFC. Shout out Paul Ayer. And I was waitlisted on the team. I made the practice team because for whatever reason, they didn't think I was good enough to make the team, right? They said, come to every practice. Maybe we'll put you on the team if you can perform and you show consistency. Gabriel made his team, so my mom was like, look, y'all practice at the same time. You both made the practice teams at least, so you both are going to go. First couple of practices, I do all right. Game's coming up in a couple weeks. That first week, I get benched. The right mid gets injured. I go in, I score 2 goals. From then, I'm on the team. Literally, that's how it happened, bro. And it was for me just keeping my head down, grinding. This PFC club was a new club. It was from the city over. So a lot of the players already knew who the coach was going to be. So I knew I had to grind. I knew I had to do my thing. I was always undersized as a center mid or whatever. So a lot of players were physically more gifted than me. But I believed in myself. I grinded. I did my thing. Long story short, I go to a new club. Now I'm playing up a year because this new club needs me. They need player for this tournament. Shout out Coach Mo. He's now at Coach Select. He says, hey, Cornelius, we need a tournament. Are you allowed to guest play? I go guest play. Again, I'm playing up a year. I'm 13 years old. This is the U14 team. We have a girl on our team just because they couldn't fill players for this tournament. I go score 3 goals. I'm named player of the tournament. Coach names me Drognelius. From then on, shout out Coach Neil. It wasn't until I get to around 14, 15 years old that I'm no longer the best player on the pitch. Just like Gabriel said, it wasn't until uni where he reached that. But me, I was always undersized. Like I said, I wasn't physically gifted, but I could play the game. Once I realized, okay, 15 years old, there are players that are just as good as me or better. Now I have to figure out how I change my game. That's when I have to realize positionally, how can I get the best at my position?
Right.
So I can do this better than everyone else, because everyone's now as fast as me. Everyone's now as good as me. So I agree with you, Salam. I think you need to learn those positional things right around that 13 to 14 age. Once you realize you're at that elite level. But for the rest of the kids, the majority of kids that aren't there, I think you need to let them just be them. Because if you start to just focus on this, that, and the third a little too early, you miss players like me who are on the cusp. Because there are a lot of players who are on the cusp that end up growing 6 inches over a summer. And now they're physically gifted. They have the technical ability. And now if you forgot about them, you may be missing something. So there is a little sweet spot, but for me, I think that you need to give players a chance. And if you go to this system, or we're going to pick these guys because they fit this right now, you miss a lot of those on the cusp guys who have the ability and the ceiling to potentially get there. So that's just how I feel about it.
And I know I don't want to spend too much time on this. This is the last thing I'm going to say about on this topic, but to answer your question, do you think it's hurting her? Like Cornelia said, for this specific example, right, Charlie, I think you know, at 12 years old for that year, no, it doesn't hurt her at all. I don't think so. But I think after that year, for sure, because I know the type of coach that you are. Like, after that, you go do what you need to do. But after that year, 100%. Like, let's start getting these fundamentals. Because I feel like at that point, I feel like the U12, U13, especially in America, I'm speaking when it comes to America, right? In England, all the foreign, other countries are different.
Yeah, right? we can't speak on that. We grew up here.
That's from young they start doing that. But for America, right, I feel like 12, 13, and you know the Salam, is when you can start to spot the serious players, the ones who are like, nah, I want to do this. And then you also can spot the true talent. And then that's also when you start getting eyes on you. If I'm being completely honest, that's when you start getting eyes on you. So that's when you're like, all right, you can do all this, but now I need you to know all these fundamentals in the system. So not only are you good at what you do, but you're good in the system as well. So then now when this coach from whoever comes to see you, or this coach is watching your game, knows you can play the position. He knows you can be you, but then also you systematically, you fit the system on what the coach does. Does it hurt her? No, I don't think it hurts her. I think it hurts her if you let her just do that all years and then never teach her. It hurts her if you never teach. But I think, you know, you just have, like Colonel said, man, you just have to let kids express themselves. Because especially when it comes to that age, I feel like that 12, 13 is when players start getting sent, like, oh, you're good. Okay, well, let's put you on this team now. Oh, we're going to play with this age group. You're going to play up a year. You're going to do this. You're going to do that. I feel like that starts happening, you know, a little bit older. So, yeah, no, it's a great topic, though. I love the quote by the Argentinian manager. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, saw it today, and I said, I think this is a good place to start. I didn't even mean to dwell on it that long, but, you know, we talk about the American system a lot and the pay to play and how a lot of things get convoluted. So it's good to hear that even the Europeans and you know, South Americans, the global world is thinking about the future of football and how we look at, you know, youth football. So thought that was huge. But, you know, while we're talking about it, let's just stay in America and talk about MLS and NWSL for a little bit. Big weekend. I want to start with the MLS. I know Mike's not here, but our Ohio teams went and got the 6 points this week. Shout out Columbus Crew. Shout out FC Cincinnati. Salam, I'll start with you, obviously, since you're here. Cincinnati clean sheet. You know, huge win, big win. You guys are now back in the top three on the Eastern Conference. Two Ohio teams and Inter Miami. So you guys are right back where I think you thought you would be once the season started. Just thoughts on the game. I know you were here this weekend, so just thoughts on the match.
No, I mean, it was a great result. Obviously, the 3 points is what is important. You know, we're 2 points off of the Columbus Crew, who is sitting in first place right now. And, you know, really, man, I've said this. I hate to sound like a broken record, but, you know, this team just has not clicked yet. Matt Miazga is now back into the picture. He's healthy, so hopefully we can get him starting. And alongside Miles Robinson, I think that if we have Robinson back there with Miazga and Flores, I think that's a solid back three, especially with Salentano in goal. So I was happy to see him back. Obviously, Evander's still out. Obina's still out as well, too. So those are two huge losses. Denki didn't score, but still looking threatening, still, you know, trying to create something for himself. So I think just like the, you know, I hate to move ahead, but just like the Crew, I think we got the job done the past 2 weeks. It wasn't pretty, but, you know, we got the 3 points. And if we can continue on like this, I mean, you know, we can solidify ourselves as one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference. You know, what we're seeing already is the Eastern Conference seems to be the more competitive league. I mean, you're looking at teams like, you know, the Crew, Cincinnati, Inter, Miami, obviously, Charlotte, Nashville. So, I mean, there's a ton of teams up there, you know, and with players coming back, I think we'll be all right. But got to get Evander back 100%. I think without him, you can just tell that that creativity and that spark isn't there. So until we're able to kind of fill that void, you know, I think we're going to get more of the same. But 3 points, that's all I can ask for.
Fair. That's fair. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I saw, Gable, you wearing the Crew. You know, you got the Crew swag on today. I don't know if you had anything to say about them.
Yeah, no, I was just, like Islam said, I mean, I feel like the Crew still are figuring out their, you know, offensive, I don't want to say handicaps, but, you know, they're still figuring out offensively in their front three. But, you know, Islam said it best. It hasn't been the prettiest of wins for the Crew. I feel like recently, you know, it hasn't been the most dominant performances that we're used to seeing. But at the end of the day, you know, this is a team that isn't – these are two teams. I don't want to say just Columbus, Cincinnati as well. These are two teams that aren't playing their best football and are still getting results, you know. Crew undefeated currently, Cincinnati top three, even Charlotte. Charlotte, Zaha's out. They aren't – I don't feel like they're – I still feel like they're not playing their best football because I feel like Zaha – is a part of that best football that they can play. But they're still playing decent football, but it's not the best and still getting results, you know? So, you know, it's just, it's that part of the season. It's that time where you can, I don't want to say you can start weeding out the good and the bad teams, but you can start to tell, you know, at this point in the season, like if teams aren't playing their best and haven't even gotten to that into that mid-season stride of, okay, we're in a role where, you know, we're kind of in form and they haven't gotten there and they're still winning and getting results, you know, these are going to be teams come, you know, come summertime, come playoff time where it's going to be tough to beat. Cincinnati is going to be a tough match, you know, Inter Miami, another one, Charlotte, another one, you know, Columbus, all of us, you know, there's going to be a lot of tough matches. So, you know, it's very, very interesting because I feel like we're at that point in the season where you can see some teams are like, I want to say some teams are peaking right now, but some teams are, you know, just on that high. But when that high dies, you know, what is your middle ground look like? Is it down here? Is it up here? Is this level still hot, you know? And I feel like we're at that point in the season where we're going to start to see teams potentially start to fall off, especially the teams that are just playing so well. I feel like, you know, some of those teams might fall off in the next couple of weeks, next month and a half or so. The fact that our two teams right now are still doing pretty well with injuries on top of that, and, you know, not playing the best and still getting results. I think both Ohio teams are in great shape right now. Very good shape.
So I know you got something to say. Just hold that thought because Gabriel brought up something and you said something that the East Coast, you know, is the stronger conference right now. I just wanted to bring up the Supporters Shield standings right now. Look at the top five teams. Vancouver right now in first place, 19 points. And then the next five teams are all Eastern Conference teams. You have Columbus with 18 points in second place, Charlotte 16 points in third place, Cincinnati also 16 points in fourth place, and then Inter Miami rounding out fifth place with 15 points. So yeah, it's tough, man. All these Eastern Conference battles are going to be battles, especially in Ohio, especially in this Midwest.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the Supporter Shield goes, I think the best shot of it going to the Western Conference is if Vancouver does it. But like Gabriel was saying, I hope they're not one of the teams that's peaking early.
Yeah, same. That was my thought when I said that. I was like, I hope Vancouver's not like peaking right now because
they've had a great start, but it's like
that was my recap. I wanted to actually bring them up since we've been talking East Coast. I want to jump to the West Coast for a little bit because the West Coast has kind of been lackluster to start, you know, these first 8 weeks of the season. Right. But we see Vancouver, you know, this past week, five goals on an Austin team that has, you know, Brad Stewart looking like goalie of the season thus far. But they gave him some to think about this past weekend. Five goals, you know, Sabi again, back-to-back goals. But then
Brian
when you
White.
Have four, when you have four goals, you got to say shout out B-Dubs, man. Shout out Brian White. Four is insane. And they were all pretty good finishes, too. I don't know. You know, obviously we're busy this weekend, but I got to watch the highlights. This Vancouver team, you know, they have one loss on the season, but in all of their wins, they look very, very dominant. How do you feel about them?
Like I said earlier, when I was talking about teams peaking, I hope they're not one of those teams that's going to peak early. I know we're not talking Prem right now, but I had that feeling like when Arsenal was good, that was that three years ago? I think it was 2 years ago now, when we started preseason hot, and I was like, oh, we look serious. And then the season went on, we went on like an unbeaten run, and I'm like, oh, we actually might be serious. You know, it took a while for, you know, that feeling of like, oh, this is actually just reality now. It's not just, you know, a run of form. So I hope this isn't just a run of form for Vancouver, but one thing that this team knows how to do is they know how to score goals. It's just point blank simple. They have goal scorers on their team, and yes, defense definitely wins matches, 100%. I'm not going to take that away from you, but goals do too. And we talk about this a lot with Chelsea. You know, Chelsea can score. They get scored on, though. You know what I mean? And I feel like if Vancouver defensively is going to be fine, this is a team that's going to score twice, potentially three times a game, just off the strength of their team and the way guys are performing. So, you know, I think this Vancouver team is serious. I'm not going to lie. They've had some very dominant performances, not only by different players as well, you know, as a team, but also different players have shown up, you know, over the course of their season so far. So, no, I think this Vancouver team is one we're going to be talking about all season, the one that will be on the watch out. Hopefully they make the playoffs and we talk about for a while. So I think it's real, though. I really do think it's real.
Yeah, I mean, I like everything that you said, Gabriel. I'm looking at the standings now, and Vancouver's clearly the best team in the West. I mean, they're sitting there at the top of the table with 19 points. And then honestly, bro, when I look at 2 through 10, I guess if I'm going to say 10, I have to say 11, because Seattle Sounders and Salt Lake are tied, you know, yeah, tied on points. But, you know, I'm looking at Minnesota, San Diego, Portland, and Colorado. They look like kind of that middle of the pack. They're like right underneath Vancouver.
Yeah, they're that tier two.
And I think every one of those teams has something different. I mean, Minnesota has had a great start, especially with the attackers that they have, and Olawaseyi and, you know, Kelvin Yeboa. And then San Diego, I mean, we talk about them every week, I feel like, almost. Like, mm-hmm. It's, you know, especially at home, I don't really see them dropping points. Portland was probably in what I think was the game of this season, you could argue, against Sporting Kansas City this past weekend. They came back and won 4-2.
That 3-3 match a few weeks ago.
That 3-3, you're right.
Dallas, yeah, that was a banger, too.
Both of those,
bangers, both of them.
Right now, for me,
that's game of the year, 100%. But then, yeah, Colorado, I mean, we talk about how, you know, we've been impressed with them. And then Austin, the teams that I just named there are, that's 2 through 6. And then you look at 7 through 11, and it's LAFC. Question marks there, but here they are. Dallas, still, you know, a bunch of new faces, haven't figured it out. San Diego, honestly, I'm a little surprised. San Jose, I'm a little surprised with, you know, Bruce and Arena being there. I feel like they had a pretty solid start. They were actually my recap, I think, week one or week two.
Yeah,
so
early.
And then just rounding it out at 10, man, Real Salt Lake. I feel like they have a good team, man. I feel like they haven't really figured out what their especially their striker position. Like, who is it going to be? I know who I think should just get a run of games, and I feel like every time that
– Shout out my boy Forrester, man. Give him a
match. Every time that he's gotten on the field, like, he's looked good, and he's made an impact on the team. I just don't understand, like – I don't know, like, this Pioli kid is also good as well, too. So I think they could even play together. I think Pioli could play on the wing. And then, obviously, Diego Luna's having the season that he's having. But, yeah, bro, West is going to be tough. As far as the Eastern Conference goes, maybe a hot take, but I mean, just based off of probability, I'm going to say the supporter shield is going to be in the Eastern Conference. Inter Miami have a game in hand, so if they win, they're tied with Columbus. But mm-hmm. I think they'll be in second place with goal differential. But
a very, very fun match this weekend too, Inter Miami versus Columbus. Right. It's actually happening in Cleveland too at the Cleveland Stadium. Yeah, so
yes, sir.
It's going to be sold out.
Easter weekend, baby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't have tickets right now, but I'm not gonna lie. I might pull up.
Yeah, man. You should definitely go, man. I think any opportunity anyone can watch Messi, I would encourage you to go watch and play. Just be prepared for a lot of walking.
Okay. But when he gets the ball, though, magical.
Bro, that's how it was in Cincy, bro. He literally walked for 80 minutes, and then in the second half, 80th minute came, and then he just turned it on. You could tell. Like, it was a wrap. They were down 2-0, too. They were down 2-0, and then it was a cup game. Down 2-0, Messi had a goal and an assist. And then in the penalty shootout, he sent us home. Well, we're already home, but
back to the house.
Man. But he was just in Chicago this past weekend. A whole bunch of my friends went to go see him. Saw a whole bunch of videos of that free kick that, you know, that got saved, hit the post. But yeah, man. One of the greats, living legend. Absolute living legend. So it's great to see him. You know, while we're in the U.S., let's just stay with the NWSL. Before we started recording, we all like low key picked squads for the season, you know. So I feel like we should just, you know, just give a little quick hitter about the teams that we're going to be, you know, supporting. Obviously, we're supporting the league. We're supporting everybody. We want to see everybody shout out NWSL. But, you know, the Washington Spirit, yeah, I've been a fan of Trinity Rodman since last season. Obviously, last week talked about her coming off the injury. She had a goal last week. This week didn't start the game, came on second half to a 0-0 draw. And what do you know? Washington won 2-0. What can I say? She adds a little bit of energy to the team. She didn't have a goal, didn't have an assist, but you could tell just her presence on the pitch. You know, she adds just a lot of a dynamic play to the wing. Once she's on the pitch, you have to just kind of always know where she is. So for me, you know, this Washington team has a lot. They have a lot going for them. You know, they have Stainbrook in the middle, who's a very, very good center mid. She's been balling, just kind of controlling the team. I like this Washington team. You know, they went deep in the playoffs last year. I think they're coming back with pretty much the same team. They're looking to just build on what they had. Obviously, we've been talking about Barba Banda a lot. We've been talking about Temwa. They're going to probably be battling it out for a golden boot this year. But when you look at just teams as far as a starting 11 and then who you have on the bench, this Washington team is very good. And then Kingsbury, the keeper, just getting woman of the match. She's very solid in the goal. So it's going to be hard to score. Yeah. Shout out Kingshammer. It's going to be hard to score on them. And then they have a lot of attacking options up front. You know, and Trinity hasn't even gotten back to full strength yet. So it's going to be a lot, man. It's Washington team. I'm telling you, man, the Spirit got spirit. You feel me?
I'm dead. Nah, I feel that. Shout out BFC. I'm rocking with the Bay. Also, I'm rocking with my favorite player on Bay is KP, man. I call her KP. But Michael,
look who came.
Special guest in the house, y'all. Special guest in the house, y'all.
Look who came.
Guest appearance. Ain't nobody was going to be here today.
But I have to try to get in.
I feel you, my boy.
All good. Welcome back. I really like Kiara Pickett. She's really, really good player to me. She really commands the midfield. She's their sixth for Bay FC. So I've liked the way she's played all season. I feel like she's, you know, their main person, one of their main people. For me, you know, Bay FC lost 2-1 this weekend against Chicago. I think it's Chicago Stars or City Stars, I believe. But, you know, I feel like Bay just needs to tighten up defensively, bro. I feel like offensively, you know, they're okay. You know, they can get a goal or two. But I feel like defensively, man, they're just lacking a little bit, bro. Just a little bit. I feel like they need just a center half to really settle things. But no, I think Bay FC is one of those teams that's going to be on the cusp and on the fringe of playoffs. Offensively, I still think they have their little hiccups, but I think offensively they can figure it out. I think defensively is the biggest piece for me. But you know, man, shout out Bay FC. I think they'll get a dub this week, but it's unfortunate, man. They defensively, bro, you keep getting cooked, bro. It's just every through ball just gets through. It's like it's the lanes are just there all the time, and it's like, fam, like, and they play a high line a little bit too. I don't like it, bro. It's bothering me. It's bothering me. But you know, I think they'll figure it out.
Yeah, Alyssa Thompson is crazy, man. I saw that through ball she got, and it just as soon as the ball was played and I saw her running, I was like, no one's catching her.
Cooked, yeah, you know, it's over with. No,
I just started looking at the goal and that.
So, I just want to see the net move.
Shout out to her, man. You got three cam heels on African Stock Football 3 weeks in a row. Alyssa Thompson. Yeah, team that I'm supporting, or the team that I'll be following this year in the NWSL will be New York, New Jersey, Gotham. Shout out to Rosemont.
Shout out that Batman.
Name is so fire. Whoever like, chose Batman. The name Gotham FC,
yeah.
Fire. I just want to let that be known. Fire.
Definitely want to pull up to a game this season. So but no, man, I think for me the biggest takeaway were two as it pertains to Gotham. The first one being they got Midge First back, which is a huge boost to them offensively. And she looked great as well, too, coming back from her injury. So hopefully she can stay healthy and continue to show the form that she did before she went out. Because I think that, again, you know, we talked about this last week and the week before. Especially in those attacking positions for the U.S. women's national team, there's a lot of competition. So with her back into the mix, I think that she adds, you know, more competition there. And then the second one was that they got their first win of the season. So, you know, hopefully they can continue. I know they've had a lot of players out, but with the return of her and, you know, Rose, I think that they'll be all right. So shout out to them, man. Mike, by the end of the episode, you have to pick a NWSO team that's not Orlando Pride and Kansas City Current.
I got you.
I'm dead.
No, that's funny. Yeah, so a little bit of history on Gotham FC. They were originally Jersey Sky Blue, known as Sky Blue FC from 2008 to 2020. And then I remember this, actually. During COVID, they were bought out. In 2020, Eli Manning and Sue Bird are actually part of the group that bought them out. So they did a whole rebrand, became Gotham City FC. Shout out Rose Lavelle, Ohio girl. You know, we've always been gassing her on this podcast, I feel
shout like, for the Dane Dutch.
Past few years. Yeah, Dane Dutch, Dutch Lions, Cincinnati girl. Shout out Gotham FC. But yeah, Mike, we were talking before the podcast just a little bit about the NWSL, and we were all like, you know, Salam kind of just set out for the group, hey, we should all pick a team just to follow for the season, have a team that we rally around. So we all picked our little squads and that's how that started. But yeah, we talked about the MLS, we talked about the NWSL. It's time to jump over to Europe.